Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, syndicating across the country on the Business Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio, WYBC.com, and 1490 AM WGCH, Greenwich, Connecticut. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business, along with the business of politics and sports. Anybody can have a bad century. The curse of the Chicago Cubs, 108 years without a championship until last year, and then a powerfully honest interview with former Major League Baseball great Daryl Strawberry on addiction. The Cubs beat the curse, and Strawberry beats the curse of drugs tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. First up, Rich Cohen's a fellow transplanted Chicagoan. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller Monsters, the 1985 Chicago Bears and the Wild Heart of Football, for which he was a guest on our show. He's a contributing editor at Vanity Fair magazine. His new book, just out in time for the baseball players and maybe another cut run by the Cubbies, The Chicago Cubs, The Story of the Curse.
Well hit, deep to right, back, run, back, high, it's all over! Willie Smith just homered, the Cubs win the game!
All right, welcome, Rich, good to have you back.
Glad to be back.
So I got to tell you, this is how sick I am about the Cubbies, but my mother passed away in 2010, and one of the first things I thought about was that she lived her entire life without a Cub championship.
Right.
It seems
well,
kind of...
I had this realization when I realized that there was nobody alive on Earth, probably, who'd been alive when the Cubs last won a championship, because you'd have to be like 108 years old. I mean, there might have been somebody in Siberia eating only yogurt, I guess, but they probably wouldn't care about the Cubs.
I have to say, though, that my grandson was born in 2016, so he didn't have to wait. But as we get off, you quote, is, Cub fans will have a diminished life determined by low expectations.
Right.
There's the GOAT, there's the Black Cat in 69, there's low expectations. Was there a curse? Tell us about it.
There was a curse, except, you know, we don't really believe in an actual metaphysical curse, but, you know, William Sienis put the Billy Goat Tavern showed up at the game in 45, the World Series game, with his goat and was kicked out of this park by Phil Wrigley himself. And he put the curse, he said, not until the goat is treated right will the Cubs ever win another championship. Then the goat, Murphy, died. So you're in big trouble. And the idea of a curse, I've come to believe, really took hold after 69, because you couldn't look at the Cubs without thinking something greater was at play. There was some metaphysical force field around a championship that, as they got closer to it, they slowed down, you know. And I think it was real in that it became a mindset, it became almost a block, it became kind of a bad culture that you had to kind of fix the culture. And the problem was, it was like a disease that would pass from generation to generation. The older players would spread it to the younger players, and when things would get tough, they would sort of hug this idea of, well, of course, you know, we're cursed. And though they didn't really believe it, it became something that was self-fulfilling, and you'd see it in crazy ways, like the famous Bartman game where, you know, this thing happened that's not such a big deal, which is a fan reached out and hit a ball. It happens all the time. And suddenly it became super dramatic, and the team fell apart, and they didn't blame the players who fell apart. They blamed the poor fan, you know, and that was just a curse on live TV.
Let's talk about, it's in the book, you really dissect this in more technical reasons, if I can. Number one, P.K. Wrigley And you make this point that owner has to really care and have the pride about winning, right, not just making money.
Owning a sports team is basically a stupid business.
Yeah.
So, and you're only going to be doing it if you love doing it and if you really, really, really want to win. And the Cubs were owned by William Wrigley, the guy who with the chewing gum, who really wanted to win. And they did win, you know, and his son took over, and his son basically didn't like baseball, wasn't very shy about saying it. When asked what his favorite sport was, said shooting craps. So now it doesn't take a tremendous amount of physical endurance. Basically, he said, we're not spending any money, you know, that chewing gum money on baseball. And he made this sort of Faustian bargain where he said, we're not going to give people a great baseball team, so you got to give them another reason to come out to the park. We'll give them Wrigley Field. We'll give them this great experience of the park. And he sort of traded beauty for excellence. And I just remember running into a friend of mine on Michigan Avenue. We were talking about Yankee Stadium. He said, Yankee Stadium is so ugly, Wrigley Field's so beautiful. I have this realization that Yankee Stadium might be unsightly, but all that winning has made it beautiful. And in Wrigley Field is beautiful, but all that losing had kind of made it unsightly, was how I felt about it around year 2000.
And, you know, you start to see the P.K. Wrigley and then that era, they had no farm system. They didn't bring in quality veterans. So there's technical reasons as well. Now, what about the age-old, they only played day games for so long. The heat beat them up. And that Wrigley Field, which is interesting, it's described as a schizophrenic, field built on whether the wind's coming in or going out. You can't build around
right.
Around it.
Well, it is. There is, I interviewed Andy McPhail, who was general manager of the Cubs, and I asked him, why can't the Cubs win? And he said, well, it's Wrigley Field. And the reason is because, like you said, it's schizophrenic in that when the wind blows in, it's a pitcher's park. When the wind blows out, it's a hitter's park. And you can't build to it like you build a team for Fenway Park with the big green monster, or you build a team for Yankee Stadium with the short porch, or even where McPhail had been, which had been the Metrodome in Minnesota. So you kind of needed a team, as Theo Epstein once said, that could win 14-13 or 1-0. And that's kind of like an all-star team, which is kind of what they built. And I had this radical solution about 8 years ago that they should tear down Wrigley Field and salt the fields where it had been so nothing would ever grow there again. And that was probably the most unpopular thing I'd ever written. And I was getting viciously attacked, and I was sort of half kidding but half serious. And then Kerry Wood retired right then, and they said, why can't the Cubs win? And he said, it's Wrigley Field, and all the attacking stopped because there's a truth to it. And that was the point. And actually, I think that, when they did the renovation of Wrigley Field, my theory was always, man, they read my story and they followed it because they put those big scoreboards up that sort of knock down and tame the wind. Sort of say Wrigley Field is still schizophrenic, but now it's on lithium.
Do you believe do you believe the day game thing, the last team to keep day games was something?
Yeah, I do believe the day game thing, but so that's interesting too, which is I always thought, okay, so it's all the day games and the fact that 69, right. Ferguson Jenkins is out there 5-7 times in August for 9 innings.
Yeah.
So when September rolls around, he's got nothing left. And now looking at it as an older person with a little more knowledge of the world, the real problem with the day games wasn't that so much. I mean, that was some degree. The real problem is that it left those guys free all night. normally you finish your baseball game 10, 11 o'clock. You got to go home, go to sleep the next day. You're getting on a plane or whatever. The Cubs would be finished at 5 o'clock. They'd go walk right across Waveland Avenue, just go into a bar and drink all night.
Okay, so let's talk now. How did Theo break it? I happened to go to Yale graduation where he spoke, and he talked about it. With basically came down to people, the team meeting that in the World Series was people. Talk about his components and architecture to beat the curse.
If the curse was real to some extent, and I believe it was, it's a culture, and it was passed from player to player. And the way you had to beat the curse is you had to change the culture. And to change the culture, you had to change the whole mentality of the players. And you had to do that by getting rid of people. And the first thing he did, it's kind of a good lesson for business, which is he basically got rid of all the veterans of the team. Okay, and then he brought in sort of players that were just placeholders. I'm sure they didn't know that about themselves. Well, he built a new team in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
And in the past, they would bring guys up who were good, like Ryan Sandberg, but you'd put them on teams with guys who had the curse, and they sort of told the stories, and the thing was the culture of it was passed down. Epstein solved that by, first of all, having a very young team And because when you're young, you're stupid. You're too stupid to know about history, so you don't even know about the curse. And you're so stupid, you're kind of brave and free. And bringing them up all at once, like building this team, growing it like in a greenhouse, and then transferring it into Wrigley Field. And not literally all on the same day, but within 2 years, all those guys came up. And they needed a couple veterans, and they brought them in from other organizations where they had won. And that's really how he did it. So you had a totally different mentality and players for whom being a Cub meant something different. It meant excellence.
Does he have a personality? Where does he get the ability to watch, to build a team that he knew was going to suck for 3 to 5 years and be able to sell that and live with it?
Well, that I interviewed him, and he said that's the first thing he said when Ricketts wanted to hire him was, are you prepared basically to not be able to go out to dinner in this town? Because this team's going to have to get so bad to be good. And for me, of course, a horrible moment for me is when the Marlins won the World Series in, I forget what year, but just right at, like within 3 years of their existence. And I thought, how is it that an expansion team can basically win the World Series and the Cubs can't? Well, it turns out it's easier because the Cubs are sort of bogged down and burdened by their history. Theo kind of turned the Cubs into an expansion team. And I just think he had this idea from Boston and from Chicago that they had to almost wipe the slate clean and start all over again. And Dallas Green said something similar when he took over. And he almost did it, but he didn't really go all the way. You know, and Theo Epstein said an interesting thing to me, which is he said one of the reasons he thinks in the recent history why they couldn't win is because WGN basically was broadcasting that team and owning the team. And they had to have a team that was always good enough that people would watch it on TV. And that meant never letting the team get truly bad in order for them to get good.
Interesting. All right, we'll be back with some more Cubs history. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know know the rules can stop the pain and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions now. Time is running out.
Call 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with the author of the Chicago Cubs Story of a Curse, Rich Cohen. Theo also did some unconventional stuff, which I found was interesting. He did not build around pitchers, per se, like the Mets have and did. And the Mets got to the World Series first, but this year has been a disaster because of pitching injuries. Something called neuroscanning, right. And the manager, Joe Maddon, was unconventional. Talk about the unconventional components.
Well, my father's a hardcore old-time baseball fan, and I grew up with the conventional wisdom, which is baseball is like 90% pitching.
Right.
And what the Cubs did was completely counterintuitive, which is they spent all their time, attention, and money on mostly position players. And I asked Theo about that, and he basically said, well, I disagree with your father, which is shocking. Okay, so he said, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, it's logical, but you don't think logically. You think by what you know you've already thought before, which is, what is baseball? It's very simple about it. You know, it's half of it is getting runs, and half of it is preventing the other team from getting runs on you. And what percentage of getting runs are your position players? 100%. And what percentage of preventing runs are your pitchers? They're not 100%. The defense is some percent, and those are your position players. And he said, I would say it's about 15% of that. Defense is the position players in the field, and if you watch the Cubs, you know that's true because there's many plays where you see, you know, Jason Hayward make a catch that would have been a double or a triple, or Javier Baez make a play you've never seen before at second base. And he said, so basically, he thinks it's 65% position players, and the position players are more important because they play every day, so they give the team its personality more than the pitchers who play like once every 5 days. And then finally, and most importantly, and if you're a Mets fan, you know about this. He said pitchers get hurt, you know, and you build this team around these young arms, and they're not there. The Cubs have this incredible redundancy where they seem to have too many players. You know, they have like six outfielders. And I asked him about that. He's like, well, that gives us incredible flexibility to put a different lineup on the field every night depending on the pitcher and where the ball is going to be hit based on the pitcher. And then also, guys get hurt, and it's not a giant setback. And you saw that in 2016 when Kyle Schwarber, right at the beginning of the year, like the second game, was gone for the whole season. The Cubs didn't miss a beat because they had Ben Zobrist, who was a second baseman who could easily play left field. It's almost like so simple, his thinking, that it's counterintuitive. And then they're really, you know, back to the money ball thing, they're looking at players who are going to win games, not that necessarily look like great players. So he told me about this thing they use where they study the neural pathways in the brain of what makes a great hitter, and they look for young prospects that have the same kind of makeup of the way their brain processes information. And he told me about a video game where it simulates a ball coming in at 100 miles an hour, and you've got to basically press a space bar right when the ball is crossing home plate, unless the ball, as it crosses home plate, turns to a different color. Then you don't press a space bar,
wow.
Which is your speed of reacting and your ability to change your actions when the information changes. And he said, we know that the best hitters in baseball can do that. And he said that's how they got Mookie Betts for the Red Sox. That's how they identified him. And that's how they're identifying players. It's almost like, you know, NASA type stuff.
Joe Maddon now.
Joe Maddon is, he'd interviewed, you know, to be a manager with the Red Sox. And Joe Maddon is a completely unconventional manager and great for a young baseball team. It's almost like I think he's like a young father with new kids, like he's having fun himself. You know, and he has a very forgiving kind of way in a very experimental way. So the Cubs would do crazy things like the famous left field game where, you know, in baseball, a problem is you have a left-handed pitcher, you have a right-handed pitcher. You want to use one, but then you lose him for the rest of the game because you got to take him out of the lineup. Maddon had this famous game in 2016 where he put a left-handed pitcher in left field and had a right-handed pitcher pitching, and he would just have one go back to outfield and the other come in and pitch and swap them that way. Now, that's what you do if you're a coach of a softball team, you know. And there's that real kind of fun. And also the idea of this Cubs team is like, you know, everything seems so specialized in pro sports. You know, you look for a second baseman, you look for an infielder, you look for a pitcher. You really got the feeling that with the Cubs, they look for the best athlete and then figured out later where they'd use them. That's how you'd sort of put together a team on the playground. You know, let me give you the best guy and he can play anywhere.
And that's how really football does it, too. You notice that's how the NFL teams build. Best talent. Yeah,
well, I remember when I did the Bears book, there a great line from one of the guys who put together the team, which is said, you know, sort of you can look for these guys who can jump the highest or run the fastest, or we would just look for football players. So you'd get a quarterback like Jim McMahon who was kind of short, didn't have a great arm, but would win all the time.
He changed the culture.
Yeah, you see that with the guys on the Cubs. And Maddon was just a really good manager for young players because the idea is young players tend to, and you see this with the Cubs still, they're streaky. You know, they haven't learned the tricks yet of how to get out of dead place or a bad stretch.
Hmm.
And they kind of feed on each other. So when one stops hitting, they'd all stop hitting. And that's why they got a guy like Ben Zobrist who was older who could come in and be a guy who could get out of that hole.
While we're on that, talk about the three types of managers, you know, the aspirin, the penicillin, the chemo, the Parcells type of guy. It came when you were talking about Leo DeRocher, but it's interesting.
Yeah, well, it was actually something told me by Doug Plank, who played for the Chicago Bears, which he said, there's, you know, three kind of coaches. There's the aspirin coach who, like, you know, he says great stuff and he's going to do this, that, but nothing changes, you know. Comes in, doesn't change anything. Hmm. Then there's the penicillin coach, and he comes in, he's amazing. He fixes everything except the one thing which he can't fix, and that's cancer. And he goes, well, what do you need? And he goes, what's cancer? He goes, cancer on a team is stuff like the curse, or it's like guys don't try. You know, dead wood, guys playing for paychecks.
Yeah.
For that, you need the chemo coach. And the chemo coach just comes in, and by his appearance and his manner, he's so tough, it's a new sheriff in town. You're going to, you know, fix yourself or you're gone, and he doesn't care who you are. And that is Leo DeRocher. He was talking about Mike Ditka.
Yeah.
He said the problem with the chemo coach is that after he's killed cancer, he keeps using the chemo.
And he kills everybody.
He kills all the healthy tissue because he's got a chemo machine, and that's all he does. And if you were a Bears fan in the 80s, you saw that that's what Ditka did. He never laid off. You know, and that's what Maddon's great at, which is those young guys didn't have cancer on that team. They were a great young team. And they needed a manager who was going to sign it, not panic, not freak out, not sort of say everything depends on what we do tonight, and had this kind of perspective you want. And to me, if you read about the old Cubs, they had a manager, Joe McCarthy, who became manager of the Yankees. And there was a famous game where Hack Wilson made three errors in one inning, and the press was all over him. And Joe, I always think this is just like Maddon. Joe McCarthy said, hey, he lost the ball in the sun. He didn't put the sun up there. And you compare that to a guy like Leo DeRocher, who in the Cubs outfielder made an error in 69 that basically my 4-year-old could have made those catches. And he said it to the press, and it destroyed the guy.
And as we go out of this segment, we look at the futility. From 1947 to 1966, they never finished above fifth place. They lost 90 to 100 games 3 years. From 60 to 66, there were 10 teams in the league. They finished 7th, 7th, 9th, 7th, 8th, 8th, 10th. From 46 to 83, never made the playoffs. In a couple of sentences, how did the fans survive?
They just have to find, what they basically do is they turn religion losing into a religion. And they make losing noble and more righteous. And they sort of say, if I'm a Cubs fan, I'm holier than you because my kingdom is not of this world. I'm going to get my World Series in the next world. And that's the culture that I grew up with. You know, the idea that we were better because we loss had made us more pure and more righteous. And that's the thing that we have to give up now, and that's the thing that Red Sox fans had to give up.
And well, in the next segment, we'll talk Ferris Bueller going to Wrigley.
There's the drive, way back, might be, Cutcliffe, Gring hits a home run into the right field bleachers.
Have you heard about Biz TV? Biz TV is the home for America's entrepreneurs, small businesses, and those who want to succeed in life. It's the first national television network committed to airing original, high-quality, educational, and inspirational programming about real business people. Small businesses drive America forward, generating 64% of all new jobs in the last decade. With over 30 million small businesses in the U.S., shouldn't you be watching Biz TV? With the right kind of ideas, motivation, and education to help fuel the next generation of business owners, Biz TV is the network you should be watching. Success stories, new ideas turned into businesses, programs full of sales tips, goal setting, how to manage, how to raise capital, and improving work-life balance. Biz TV is for those who want to succeed. Visit BizTV.com and call your satellite or cable service provider to request Biz TV.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Biz Talk Radio.
I never had a problem hitting, I had a problem living. That's Daryl Strawberry, our guest. He was a power hitting outfielder with a big smooth swing, a star of the 1986 World Series New York Mets. He also played for the Dodgers, San Francisco Giants, and the Yankees. He hit 335 home runs and exactly 1,000 RBIs over a 17-year career, was en route to Cooperstown and the Baseball Hall of Fame when his career was derailed by substance abuse problems. His new book, not just a baseball book, and it's written with addiction experts, Don't Give Up on Me, Shedding Light on Addiction. Welcome, Daryl. Honor to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me this morning.
And as I told Ron Darling once when I interviewed him, the 86 Mets were one of the last times that I was in love with baseball. Once the steroid era came, I lost a little bit of interest. So thanks for all the action then. And congratulations, if I got it right from your book, you've been sober for 12 years?
14. They kind of misprinted that, but that's okay.
14, that's even better. And this is not... This is not a baseball book. Tell us briefly to start off what your purpose is here.
Well, the whole purpose is our group that came together, myself and the doctors, and John Picciano, who's the CEO for Oglethorpe and the Daryl Strawberry Recovery Centers, and Ron Dock, who is a certified addiction counselor. We've worked together helping people, and Ron brought me together with this group a couple of years ago. They wanted to do treatment centers, and you know, just from my story and Ron's story, who worked with the Yankees and he was a counselor for like 16 years, we just thought it was time to write this book with the epidemic that's going on across America with opiates and heroin addiction. There's so many young people losing their life because of no education on addiction. I think what has happened is prescription drugs have entered in and entered into their lives, and it's destroying them. And we're just really trying to bring about awareness and educating the stigma on addiction. It's been people a week, and it's not. It's a disease, an illness of the mind. And if we can get back into the schools and educate people, I've been reaching out to the president, Trump, to try to get on his team program to really educate people so he can allow us to get back in the schools and help some of these young people to avoid the pitfalls like I did and many others.
Doing great work. We're going to dive into that coming right up. Let me ask you, do you think 100% you'd be a Hall of Famer without the drugs?
Oh, no question. I mean, I think, you know, coming, I was already active drinking when I was young, 13, 14 years old, and smoking marijuana, which a lot of kids end up in marijuana maintenance and think it's nothing wrong with it. But eventually it stops working, and then you lead to other things. When you're broken inside and you're never healed inside, because of the fact that my father was an alcoholic and used to beat the crap out of me and said I'd never amount to nothing, and I go on to be a baseball player. But like I tell people all the time, it was my pain that led me to my greatness, and it was my greatness that would end up leading me to my destructive behavior. Of course, I was a baseball player, but it never allowed me to be a man because of the hurting inside and never dealt with that part. And I'm like everybody else. I just cover it up. You know, my feelings were covered up with alcohol, drugs, and just to escape from the fact of who am I.
The one other question related to potential. Should the 86 Mets have won more World Series if the team hadn't sort of, I guess, moved too close to the edge of partying, et cetera?
Well, of course. There's no question about it. We're a great group of guys. I love all those guys. We're wonderful to play with. What we did coming into New York and turning that franchise into a winner was incredible. Davey Johnson, Frank Cashin, the general manager, they built the team, and we had everything we needed to have. You know, I just think our lifestyles was just a little bit way out of control from time to time. And I think if we'd have slowed down and got some rest at night, we would have probably ended up being more successful and winning more championships. You know, of course, we lost in 88. We should have won that year, but we lost to the Dodgers, and they go on to beat the Oakland A's in that series of the championship.
Yeah, and in fact, I sometimes wonder if that edge that gave you the swagger was the same edge on the negative side, so whether you would have won without that edge. But let me ask you this, because I heard this years ago when the problems emerged, and Frank Cashin, who built the team, said that he felt, and the Mets felt a little guilty, that they had stolen your youth, and he was referring to Dwight Gooden and yourself, by putting you under the pressure so early in your lives. What do you think of that?
Frank Cashin was a remarkable person, and an incredible man who had great wisdom and insight, and he really didn't want us to be in the big leagues at that young age. He didn't want me to come up at 21, and he didn't want Dwight to come up at 19. He felt like we needed to be more seasoned as a person down in the minor leagues to grow into, you know, who we are and everything. Because he just didn't feel like we had that growth just yet of becoming a man, especially playing in a place like New York and then being under the spotlights. And he always was cautious about that, because I think he remember a young player like Tim Leary had got hurt and hurt his arm. He was a phenomenal pitcher, and he never recovered from it. And I think Frank was a little worried and concerned about myself and Dwight coming to New York and having to stand and play under that kind of pressure. I don't think he was never concerned about our baseball ability. Mm-hmm. I think he was concerned about more of our life and how would we live, how would we handle being in a place like New York City.
Tells you what a great guy he was. He wasn't just looking to exploit your talent. All right, tell us the book, Don't Give Up on Me. Tell us what you mean exactly by that.
Well, it means don't give up on anyone just because they have a substance abuse problem. Something's wrong, some trauma, some brokenness inside has happened to a person to allow a person to go so far and escape and get down into the depths of addiction. Addiction is a illness of the mind. Anything that alters the mind is going to make you ill, and you just don't know what results are going to turn out in a person's life. And if it wasn't for my wife, Tracy, and Ron, Doc, people like that, that were there for me, that never gave up on me, even through the hard times. It was some really hard times, and mine was public. And it was some really hard times that I had to overcome things to be able to get back on the other side of life. But they didn't give up on me, and that's the importance of family. Don't give up on your loved ones. You could love them right where they're at, but you don't have to tolerate it, but just don't give up on them. Just keep believing that their life can change. They can recover. Somebody can help them. Somebody can educate them about addiction, and they can get up on the other side of it.
And it also refers to your mother always believing in you, right?
My mother, yeah, always believing in me, that I would do something great and mighty, different than baseball. I see most people think, well, it was baseball. You know, baseball was just a platform, but it wasn't my life. And my mother always believed that I was going to have an impact, a global impact on people's lives. She said, she always believed that God was going to use me mightily to do something different to help other people. And I'm just grateful. And I'm grateful for, like I said, my wife, Tracy, who never gave up on me, who was one that helped me turn my life around and find my purpose in life.
Let me ask you this. So in the book, it refers to addiction as a runaway train. And people feel it's shame to get help. And recently, Craig Carton related to gambling. How hard and how important is it to ask for help to stop the train?
It's very hard because we're people of, you know, pride. You know, we don't want people to think we're weak or anything like that, but it's not a weakness, and that's what people don't understand. Addiction is very powerful in all areas: gambling, sex, porn, drugs, alcohol. It's real, and it's really necessary for one to get help and to be able to go through some serious counseling for a long time, not a short time, but for a long time, to get the mind well again, because the mind has to heal. And it will heal if we allow ourselves not to pick up and not to use. It's just a process that you have to go through, and it's a struggle. It's not an overnight miracle. I think too many people think, well, they should be well, or why are you taking drugs? Why are celebrities taking drugs and they have all this money? Money don't make you happy. You know, money just make you buy stuff and live comfortable, but it's not going to make you happy. It's not the answer to what's going on inside you. And we all look great on the outside, but what about the inside? What has happened in your life to make you not like yourself or dislike yourself? And I see it so much with what we're dealing with today, and that's why so many kids are dying, because they don't like themselves. I've sat with them in treatment center, and they just said, I really don't like my life. I started smoking marijuana at the age of 13, 14, just like you, and I went from that to pills and went from that to heroin and, you know, just rather have drugs, you know, to not feel. So we just need to be able to encourage people. What's important is to truly love someone because their life matters. I just recommend that parents pick up this book because you never know when your child is going to make your wrong decision and get a prescription. Because if he does, I tell them, don't allow your child to get a prescription, please, when I speak. Don't, because once they get one, it's going to alter their mind. It's going to be a different kid. Let them take Tylenol like we used to back in the days and tell them to lay down the pain and we'll go the way, but take a Tylenol or ibuprofen something until you feel better.
And you talk about your mother never giving up on me. I think somehow she's looking down, very proud of you. Tremendous work you're doing. The book is Don't Give Up on Me, Shedding Light on Addiction, and it's out October 16th, but you can pre-order it now at Amazon and places like that. You can go to strawberrycenter.com to learn more about the recovery centers and strawberryministries.org for Daryl's website. Daryl, thanks for giving us a few minutes, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much for taking time out.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
You became a nurse for a lot of reasons. You care about people and you love taking care of them. Being a nurse is who you are. But today, many medical facilities require nursing candidates to have bachelor's degrees. So you're probably going to want to have that degree. But you work. You may have a family. How can you possibly fit getting your bachelor's degree in your already tight schedule? With the online RN to BSN Bridge Program at Independence University, our online learning model helps you balance your work, your family, and your desire to move up in your nursing career. Class sizes are small and personal, and we're 100% focused on helping you through the program so you can earn your degree. An IU's online RN to BSN program is accredited by the Commission on Collegiate Nursing Education. Our goal is to help you achieve your goals. Independence University's online RN to BSN program. Call now.
888-904-1986. 888-904-1986. 888-904-1986. That's 888-904-1986.
Biz Talk Radio.
Our guest, Rich Cohen, he's dissected the Cubs' curse in a new book. And I want to start off with the Ferris Bueller component. You started going to games by yourself and sitting in the bleachers at age 13, and your teachers didn't seem to mind?
Well, they didn't mind when I went to the playoffs in 84 because that was so unusual. My joke is you didn't even have to show a note. If you just showed a ticket stub, they said, okay, you're excused. And it was really, I've always associated Wrigley Field with kind of freedom because it was the first place you could go somewhere on your own, have an experience. And, of course, we're talking all about, you know, what happened on the field, but what happened in the stands is just as important to us.
Yeah, by the way, I learned a lot about that, too, that the left field bleacher bums and the right field bleacher bums didn't really get along.
Well, there was a rivalry, and I was. You have to choose. It's like choosing a political party. You don't really know why you made the choice, but then you're completely stuck with that choice for the rest of your life, and you'd sit out there, and we'd chant, right field sucks. And we hated the people in right field. And Joe Mantegna wrote a play she used to show every year on PBS called The Bleacher Bums, which was all set in the bleachers. It was clearly the right field bleachers. You could just tell. And at the end of his life, Bill Veeck went and watched a bunch of games from Wrigley Field. He was sitting in the left field bleachers. I mean, there are reasons for all this. It wasn't just a random thing. I don't think it exists as much anymore because it's harder to get in, and you sit wherever you can get a seat. But back then, you really had some freedom because it was, you know, about a third empty.
Okay, we'll talk heartbreak now. I'll dig my year first, and then your 69 was my year. And I can still name the, you know, Ron Santo, Kessinger, Beckert, Banks, Hundley, Kenny Holzman, Fergie Jenkins. I couldn't name as many guys on the current team. They had a 9-game lead going into September. And to make it worse, I was just starting prep school in Connecticut where everybody was a Mets fan. What happened?
Well, first of all, that team was truly a great team when you look at it. It's mind-boggling that they didn't win because they have several guys on the team. Many of them were in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And every one of them had been an all-star at some point. You know, there's a big argument about what happened. Ernie Banks, who I interviewed at the end of his life, told me that it was this game in New York where they sort of fell apart and the center fielder made a bunch of errors and Ron Santo attacked who was the captain, attacked his own center fielder in the press. And according to Banks, I mean, he really was not nice about Santo. He said the team stopped being a team at that point, which, you know, wasn't so important right then, but it became important when the whole thing tightened up in September. So that's what he said. Another, if you look at how many games Cubs pitchers, how many innings they pitched compared to the Mets, Leo DeRocher overworked them.
Yeah.
Hundley, I think, caught like 158 games in that afternoon sun. And and the year before, he'd caught like 160, which is a record. No one catches that many games. So he kind of drove his team into the ground. The question is that because that's just the kind of guy DeRocher was, or is it because they weren't deep? Like, the team now has got a lot of depth, and that team didn't have a lot of people on the bench. So, you know, there's that, and then there's, you know, the curse. Yes. And there's the black cat, and there's all the stuff that happened. But the fact is that they, down the stretch, they just collapsed. And there's a million different reasons for it, but the first Cubs game I went to was in 76. And I was probably first aware of them like 74, 75. And it was weird because if you look at those rosters, that's the ruin of that 69 team. I didn't know it. I always likened myself growing up then to like somebody growing up like outside of Rome, like in the Dark Ages. Like, I didn't realize I was surrounded by the ruins of a once majestic culture. Like, I would be digging in the garden and come up with like a head of Marcus Aurelius or something. I'm like, what is this? Because he's still, you know, Banks retired. He was still around.
Yeah.
Santo was still around. Santo got traded to the White Sox. You know that, right?
Yes.
For, you know who he was traded for?
I don't. Who?
Steve Stone.
Oh, yes. And you tell a great story, by the way, that, you know, he was a diabetic, that he hit a home run when he was seeing three pitchers because he was about to go into a diabetic coma. By the way, I got to tell you, about Ernie Banks too quickly. This is the kind of guy he was. I was at a pro-am golf tournament at our club in Lake Forest, and I'm walking next to Ernie. He starts asking me, and I just graduated from business school at Dartmouth. He starts asking me about that, asking if we can do business together, all to make me feel good. And
right.
He's the freaking guy that's the celebrity. Tell us now, as we get down to the last few minutes, what was the 2016 World Series? What are the key moments to you?
Of the actual series itself?
Of the whole, of anything, the ethos, the culture, the, you know, what are your takeaways? And one is surprising to me was that you almost felt alone at the end and that now the Cubs weren't going to be different.
Yeah. Well, for me, a big moment, which was actually in the LCS, which showed you what the Cubs were like, I mean, the, you know, the NLCS, was when I was sitting there in the press box, auxiliary press box at Wrigley, and Javier Baez stole home. I've never seen a person steal home plate. And that was just him, and he's the most exciting player in baseball, I think. So that, and then I think that when the Cubs, at the end of Game 7, when the Indians tied the game, I honestly said to the guy next to me, I put it in the book, I said, well, at least we're still ahead. And he said, no, it's tied. And I go, no, it's not. I mean, like, my brain wouldn't accept what had just happened.
Yes.
And I looked at the scoreboard. I'm like, the scoreboard's broken. It says it's tied. He's like, it is tied, you idiot. You know, and then when the Cubs came back, and I called my wife, and she said, and I said, does this mean there was no curse? She goes, did you see what just happened? Are we watching the same game? I've never seen better evidence of a curse in my life. What you're seeing is how good you have to be to overcome a curse. It's like this team has the flu, and like they almost got out of bed, and now they're back on their ass again trying to get back up, and finally they did overcome it, but it was like all these things kept happening, going down 3-1, you know, when they suddenly stopped hitting, and then suddenly when they lost control of that game, and then Madden's crazy moves with the pitchers, taking out pitchers who were cruising and putting in other guys, and Chapman giving up the home run. The whole thing was like, I mean, of course, that's how it had to end. The drought had to end with the greatest game in baseball history, and that's what it was. And when I was going home from that game, my attitude was not only I don't want to be at a party, I want to be alone in a room and just process what happened. And my first thought is now they should just end the pro baseball, disband the major leagues. It's reached its proper ending. The Cubs went into the wilderness 170 years ago. They just crossed the Jordan River. They're back in the promised land. It's over.
Thanks to Rich Cole, and that was a great interview. The book is The Chicago Cubs Story of a Curse. He'll be in my hometown, in fact, at Lake Forest College on October 3rd. Locally, he'll be at Ridgefield Library. What day is that? Do you know, Rich?
It's October 26th, 7 p.m., and I'll be handing out Cubs ice cream cones.
Okay.
I can look it up.
You've been listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Our final national segment will be with Daryl Strawberry on addiction. And now, with no further comment needed, the final out of the 2016 World Series, ending 108 years of curse.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series! Bryant makes the play! It's over! And the Cubs have finally won it all!
Go Cubs, go! Go Cubs, go! Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are going to win today.
It's a man!
Go Cubs, go!
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.